How's it going? Well, I hope you've had a superb sporting week. Yep, it's that time of the week again. Thanks for joining us. This is Talking Point. Welcome to it. My name's Trevor Cromer. Well, what a euphoric week for South African sport, hey? Another dramatic chapter written in South African rugby history. World champions for a record fourth time. A chapter written at the Stade de France in Paris last Saturday night by Siya Kolisi and his men. And dare we dream, can our Proteas deliver the double and capture the Cricket World Cup in India? Who knows? Certainly well on their way with a spot in the semi-finals pretty much wrapped up. Joining me in studio this week, leader of our pack, regular on our show, the head of Citizen Sport, Jacques van der Westhuizen. And Jacques, in final training for the Soweto Marathon, I'm led to believe, this coming weekend. Great to have you with us as always. Welcome back.
Yeah, thanks, Trevor. What a weekend it's been weeks ahead for us. So fantastic to be here again.
And he'll join us a bit later in the show on the Talking Point Hotline, senior citizen sports writer Wesley Botten, who, among other beats, keeps us in the loop, should I say, with matters cricket on our online and print portals at The Citizen. Jacques, what does one say? The Rassie Erasmus and Jacques Nienaber show played itself out on a perfect note. The Springboks have retained the coveted William Webb Ellis Cup. Before we get into the nitty-gritty, Jacques, the Boks have put us through three consecutive weeks of heart palpitations, absolute hell, ground out three consecutive single-point victories over France, England and New Zealand. My nerves, I can tell you, are completely shot. But very quickly, Jacques, taking off your journalistic hat just for a moment, from a personal perspective, how are you feeling as a South African right now?
Yeah, I'm feeling fantastic. I mean, our country, as Siya Kolisi has said so many times, our country goes through so much every day. We've got so many problems in this country that we deal with on a day-to-day basis. And the Springboks have really lifted our spirits. They've given us something to cheer about, something to smile about. And something to really celebrate. And it's not only, what happened at the weekend and that. The Springbok team have been fantastic for the last 6 years, 7 years. So they really are a beacon of hope for all of us. And they're truly inspirational. I mean, they really have shown that anything is possible. So I feel it really is a great feeling. And as we sit here right now, the trophy tour is going on around the country. So, bringing hope and joy and a bit of happiness and cheer to everybody, which is great.
By Jacques Nienaber's own admission, the building blocks were laid as early as 2016 already. You briefly alluded to that. Winning the World Cup in 2023 was the long-term mission, but 2019, as he described it, was a bit of an accident. I'm not going to dig too deeply into analysing the final, Jacques. It's been done to death, I'm quite sure you'll agree. But very quickly, just your takeaways from the final against the All Blacks and also the tournament as a whole.
Yeah, the takeaways from the final, very briefly. I mean, not the prettiest final. And obviously, a lot of foreigners have been critical of the Springboks and the way they play the game and that. But, for me, it was an absolutely riveting final, maybe because, we were all supporting the Boks and that and so on. But, I thought it was great. The big takeaway for me was that unbelievable defense by the Springboks. If you go back and you look at some of the analysis that's been done, the rush defense really put the All Blacks under so much pressure. They made mistakes that they wouldn't normally make. They dropped the ball. They made poor passes. They lost the ball in contact because of the rush defense, where Peter Steftatoy led that. And that was phenomenal for me, is the number of tackles made and how we really put them under pressure. So that was the big thing. And then obviously at the end of the day, four successful kicks. Won it for the Springboks, not a high-scoring game. The All Blacks' try that they did score was from a knock forward or a loose ball that bounced forward, so they got a bit lucky there. Otherwise, they would have just scored two penalties. So those are the big takeaways for me. Looking back at the tournament as a whole, I thought it was a fantastic World Cup. Wonderful matches, not too many matches, except really for the Springbok ones in a strange way. In the knockouts and that. But, some big scores, some good rugby. I love the fact that Portugal really came through during the tournament, really, punched above their weight. And then obviously the Springboks did phenomenally well in those knockout matches. Nothing has really changed in world rugby. It's still the Springboks and All Blacks leading the way, which is, not very nice for the Northern Hemisphere teams, but that's the way it is. And now we look forward to the next four-year cycle.
You speak of that, Jacques. The 2027 World Cup will be on the radar once again, once the dust has settled, no doubt. The street parades, as you mentioned, they'll be well over by then. And all the players settling back at their clubs, their franchises around the world. For now, it seems no rush to replace Jacques Nienaber, though, who is Leinster-bound, of course, in Ireland. There is a suggestion, and through the week we've seen it in The Citizen even, that Russie takes the reins at least till his contract expires in 2025, with a view perhaps even to a smooth handover, even potentially to Mzwandile Stick or Dion Davids. I know you've got some firm views on this one, Jacques. Would you care to share?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I firmly believe that Russie really is the glue in this coaching setup. He's taken a back seat in a way over the last 4 years with Jacques Nienaber stepping forward as the coach. But Russie really has been the leader as the director of rugby, and he's been heavily involved in everything around the box. And with Nienaber leaving, you know, you don't want to also have Russie leaving in 2 years' time, 2 years before a World Cup. And then, you know, it's a difficult one because as good as some of those assistant coaches are, I don't see any of them really standing up and being the director and the leader as Russie has been and is currently. And that's why I'm of the opinion that SA Rugby must do whatever they can to keep Russie at least until the next World Cup. Gives them another 4 years. There's no reason why the Springboks can't seriously challenge for that World Cup again in 4 years' time. A lot of the players will be more senior then. Obviously, there are going to be changes because some of them are too old now and they won't be around in 4 years. But I really think, you know, with the depth that they've created in the last number of years, the Springboks setup will be fantastic again in 4 years' time. But you need a proper leader there, and I think Russie is that guy. So I would love to see him stay on, whether it's in a head coaching role or as a director or as a consultant, doesn't really matter, but he needs to be there. It's just too much of a change with him and Nienaber leaving, you know, within 2 years of each other. Yeah, that's, you know, that's the biggest thing for me that SA Rugby have to get sorted out, I think, in the next year.
Perhaps just elaborating a bit, you did mention it, a good deal of players who are unlikely to be around in 2027. There have been some remarkable comeback stories to tell as well, even this year. So age is just a number, seemingly, to use a cliche. Is there another Siya Kolisi-led generation of Springboks still, perhaps? Or is it time now to bridge the generation gap? Your take on that one.
Yeah, it's a very difficult one. You know, a lot of those guys in that Springbok setup have been around since 2015, including Siya. You know, so he's already played 3 World Cups. And a lot of those guys are in the same boat. So, you know, you wonder to yourself, in 4 years' time from now, it would be a fourth World Cup for a lot of them. Maybe they're just a little bit over the hill, maybe not as strong and as powerful and able to go for as long as they have been able to in the past. You know, playing at 4 World Cups is a big ask of anybody, and for going that long in a rugby career is a lot. And, you know, there's no way you're going to be at the peak of your powers in your mid-30s. I think late 20s, around the 30, you know, age group where they are now is probably prime. And then, you know, hopefully, you know, we can find a number of youngsters coming through. I mean, if you look at our franchise teams at URC level, there are a number of young players there that are sticking up their hands. And I think it's going to be important to get those guys in, you know, within the next year or so and groom them and help them, guard them, you know, get them familiar with you know, the senior players and with the way the Springboks operate, and that there are those guys. It's going to be a big transitional period, though, I think, for Springbok rugby over the next 4 years, and there might be a few aches and pains and a few defeats along the way, but I think it's crucial that we identify young talent from the off, you know, when they get together again in 2024, and start grooming some of those youngsters to be there in 4 years' time.
You mentioned Portugal, Jacques. Now, just in terms of the World Cup format, looking at the next tournament in Australia in 2027, in line with trying to spread the game globally, the new format will feature 24 teams, 6 pools of 4 teams each, with a round of 16 added to the knockout phase. This year, again, we saw quite a few lopsided results against so-called Tier 2 teams. What are your thoughts on the format for the next World Cup, Jacques?
Yeah, again, you know, it's a difficult one because you want to grow the game, obviously, and expose more teams and more players to rugby and getting them to play at a higher level. I don't know if the World Cup is the place to do that, though. I think the format as it is now is great. There are far too many weak teams playing at a World Cup who shouldn't be there. There is a opportunity for them that has been created now by World Rugby in a new competition, a Nations Cup. And they're looking at other opportunities for the lower second tier teams. I think that's exactly where they have to go. I don't like the fact that they're making the World Cup bigger. It's not the place to expose players. I don't think it helps anybody, to get 60, 70, 80 points against you and you're struggling and you're on the back foot and you don't have a hope at all, to win against a bigger team. So I'm not in favor of that. I'm in favor of expanding rugby and growing rugby, but I think they need to have much bigger opportunities at a lower level for those teams. I mean, there's no reason why they can't have a World Cup type competition for all the second and then even the third tier teams. So it's going to be interesting. We've seen lopsided results this year. We saw it 4 years ago. We see it every time the World Cup is held. And there's absolutely no doubt we'll see it again in 4 years' time, especially with more teams being added.
Just to wrap the rugby discussion from my side, the late Nelson Mandela must have shed a tear or two wherever he finds himself today. May he rest in eternal peace. Madiba used the power of sport to unify and rebuild a fractured nation. Make no mistake, we're a troubled nation right now. But the Springboks are living proof that they're uniting our nation. Everybody's pulling together as one, albeit for a short period, perhaps. Jacques, a last word from you on this one.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying. I've been listening to so much commentary over the last couple of days about this performance and this victory by the Springboks, and a lot of people saying what a great leader Siya is, and that anything is possible, and it is so true. But, the one thing that really stands out for me is that you've got this great leader in Siya who is respected by the players and who really has the team at heart, who has the country at heart. But more than that, you've got, leaders above him in Rassie and Jacques Nienaber and the coaches who are really the driving force behind the team because they're the guiding force who lay out the plan, who do the selections. And the key thing there for me that stands out is that they've got experience. They've been there for many years. Rassie played for the Springboks. He played at the World Cup. He's got rugby running through his veins. He's an experienced person who understands rugby, who understands this country. And that, for me, is the key thing over here. If we want to cross over to the political spectrum in this country or whatever, we need leaders who are at the heart of their portfolio, that they've got their experience, that they can draw on people around them. And only in that way can this country really move forward. I think if you've got experience at the top, who know what they're doing and who can, pinpoint certain things and get people in the right positions to take us forward. And that's what Rassie has done. And that's why I say he is so crucial to the Springbok setup. Rugby is in him, and that's the only thing that he really cares about is rugby and the people, that he can bring hope to.
Switching to white ball cricket now. Thanks for your patience on the Talking Point Hotline. Welcome back to our senior citizen sports writer, Wesley Botten, who amongst his beats is covering cricket. Nice to have you on board again, Wes. Thanks for joining us.
Always good, Trev.
Now, Wes, with the rugby taking centre stage for quite some time, the Proteas have managed to go about their business at the Cricket World Cup with a little fuss or fanfare. Barring a catastrophe, they look likely to make the semi-finals after a comprehensive thrashing of New Zealand in Pune. Two games to go in the league phase. They still, they have to play favourites and host India and the unpredictable Afghanistan, who've dished up a few surprises of their own in this tournament. Wes, the signs are looking very good. Dare we dream of another World Cup coming home?
I think we can. I think there's still some issues within the squad. There's still a bit of uncertainty. When we were watching the Springboks, I think even when they were losing by 1 point, we always had this confidence that they could do it. But there's this kind of cloud that hangs over the cricket side. I don't think it's just that joker's tag that they're carrying for all these years. I think it's also just the inconsistency that they've shown this season. A lot of confidence in the team, but we'll see if they can carry it over the line. They've got two more pool matches, and then they've got two difficult playoffs. It doesn't matter who they play. So Yeah, let's hold thumbs, but not overly confident at the moment.
It is a team effort, yes, Wes, but we just can't help talking about Quinton de Kock's form. He crashed through the 500-run barrier already at the World Cup, first batter to do so at the tournament. He's fourth ton in seven games, and with his intense, serious demeanour, he's just making it look so effortless.
He does make it look effortless. You know, Rassie van der Dusen was saying how, well, you know, what a pleasure it is to bat with him out in the middle because he's so calm. And that, you know, the other guys obviously feed off him. And I think having an opening batter in such good form, you know, gives the rest of the guys confidence. If you're coming in fourth or fifth and the opener is still there and he's got his eye in, that definitely helps. So, yeah, you know, a lot of the batters are doing well, but great to see de Kock in his last World Cup tournament really kind of standing up. And like we were saying, going into the playoffs, hopefully he can keep that going.
Not to mention the depth, van der Dusen, Klaassen, Miller, Markram, even Janssen down the order. Rob Walters' mandate to go out and express themselves and play with freedom is certainly evident, is it not, Wes?
It is. And, you know, van der Dusen also said this week, you know, it helps knowing that you've got so many great batsmen in form. Because if you don't come off, you know that somebody else will. And that has been the case in just about all their matches, not just at the World Cup, but in the build-up as well. In most of the games, you have to have at least one or two of the guys standing up. So that depth really helps. And that's another reason I think that, you know, they're such a confident team at the moment.
And just finally, Wes, the bowling unit also appears to be building confidence in their ability and hunting as a pack at the moment. Marco Janssen plugging the gap left by Unritten or Kier admirably as a new ball partner to Lungi Ngidi and Kagiso Rabada. Keshav Maharaj doing big damage against New Zealand. Even Gerald Coetzee doing his thing at the top level. Promising signs everywhere amongst the bowlers and importantly, consistent improvement, we have to say.
Yes, they have improved a lot. I think one of the issues that we had was that they were struggling to bowl opposition out. You know, they wouldn't battle too much with the top order, but then for some reason, just at the death, just letting the tail wag a bit long. And then their last couple of games, they've really showed the ability to bowl out a team. And like you say, Janssen coming through, I think we were really concerned that Unritten or Kier was not playing at this tournament. But Janssen's really getting a lot of movement out of the conditions that they've played in. He's really using the seam to his advantage, getting a lot of swing. And that has kind of alleviated the concerns of Nokia's pace missing from the attack. So as a frontline bowler, especially considering he's an all-rounder, he really has done well. And like you say, you know, just backed really well by the likes of Khabada and Ngidi, the spin bowlers, even Gerald Coetzee. So like the batters, yeah, it's been really good to see all-round performances.
Forward march. Let's hope this is the year the Proteas finally unshackle themselves from that very unwanted tag. Not worth mentioning at this particular juncture, but who knows. Wes, thanks for your input. Great to chat to you as always. Very brief this time, but we'll get into discussions through the weeks as the tournament progresses. And Jacques, but please don't run away, gents. You know what's coming. It's our weekly Flop and Gold Star of the Week feature. My Flop of the Week, I'm awarding it this week to the Russian tennis player Daniil Medvedev. His petulance, his grouchiness, his tantrums at the ATP Paris Masters this week, refusing to continue playing until the Paris crowd stopped whistling and hissing at him and subsequently handed a time violation, also giving what he called the stupid crowd the middle finger, and he tossed his racket around in temper. He ended up being ousted in the second round by Bulgaria's Gregor Dimitrov in three sets. And my gold star goes to, not a tough one, it's the Springbok World Cup group as a collective. I've put aside awards too for Quinton de Kock and Rassie van der Dusen this week for their explosive batting against New Zealand at the Cricket World Cup. Jacques.
Yeah, Trevor, I can't disagree with you. The Springboks have been fantastic, so they get the gold star this week. I don't think anybody's going to pip them to that one. And then, you know, my flop goes to World Rugby again, not for a specific thing, but obviously in the final we had, you know, Sam Kane red carded for a dangerous tackle that was fairly high. I think it was very disappointing that we had to have a final with a red card in it and so early in the game. It's not Sam Kane's intention to hurt anybody, and I really think World Rugby need to go and relook this situation with the red cards, you know, very seriously now after this World Cup. They need to go and assess the situation that rugby finds itself in. You know, if it's, you know, that serious, I don't know if it warrants red carding and ruining the game that we have in front of us now. I think a yellow card would be substantial, if anything, and then a player can be banned or fined or whatever afterwards. But to, you know, to send a guy out of the game in a World Cup final is just not on for me. And World Rugby really need to look at that situation.
How are you leaning this week, Wes?
Well, I wish I could give the gold star to Quinton de Kock for his fourth century of the Cricket World Cup. But, you know, like you guys have said, the Springboks did too well for that. So we've got to give it to them. And then I suppose the flop of the week, my side's got to go to the national netball team. They lost a three-test series against Australia. They were playing in Australia, and Australia are the world champions. So don't want to be too hard on them, but they didn't really put up a fight. They lost convincingly in all three games, so my flop of the week goes to them.
And that's where we'll wrap it. Have yourself a great sporting week with the Citizen as your constant companion, both online and in print. Jacques van der Westhuizen, head of Citizen Sport, thanks for joining us, sharing your wealth of sporting knowledge with us. Also, once again, to our panelists on the Talking Point Hotline this week, senior Citizen sports journalist Wesley Botten. Thanks, guys. My name's Trevor Cromer. This has been Talking Point. You'll find us on citizen.co.za. Click on the multimedia subsection, and it's under podcasts. Or why not follow the Citizen News on Iono FM? You'll also find the Talking Point video podcast on the Citizen YouTube account. Go and check it out and subscribe. Have an awesome sporting weekend from us. Cheers.